here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Behind the Blue Curtain, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Discretion is advised.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. All right, we're about to get into it. Let me get the Facebook Live people connected in and going. Anyway, this has been a heck of a week for everybody, not just me, all of us, because this is America after all. So let me say, first of all, good morning to Claire. What's going on, Claire?
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm excited to be here, excited to get ready for the show. I was up all night doing finals, so don't know how much help I'll be, but I'm here, and I'm excited to get going.
All right, we're about to get into it. Let's go down and talk to the big chief. Our Facebook is loading up. Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. Again, as always, every Saturday, excited to be here. Kind of cold here in Texas. It went from 80 to like 40, like a Saw State Trooper. So chilly out here on the back porch this time. But I think it's going to have a pretty good, interesting topic here today. But again, excited to see my family on the Saturday, and ready to get forward, get moving.
Hey, that's what we do. Good morning, Iz. What's going on, bro?
Morning, everybody. Happy to be here. All's well on the tropical island of Brooklyn. Had that great, cold, nasty weather that the Chiefs experiencing a little bit of, but happy to be here, ready to get started on the topic, lots to talk about. Thankfully, we always have something to talk about because everything pretty much stays terrible, so.
Oh, wow. Come on, bro. Give us something optimistic. Give us some hope right quick. Is
hope?
Yeah.
Please.
Give us some hope. Go to Joe for hope. Hope. Yeah. Tell us something, bro. Come on.
Homicide rates are apparently up, except in Boston, where they lowered their homicide rates and increased their gun seizures. That's optimistic, right?
Well, we'll work with that one. That works. Let's drop down. Say what's up to Big John. What's up, John?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Good to see Izzy in rare form. Getting his coffee in him. He's really going to get going this morning. I was hoping Joe could talk to the chief about what cold is because. 40 degrees, Chief, I think
it's warm. Tell them
what a normal day is for the rest of the world,
man. It's Texas, you understand. We're Texas. 40 degrees is cold. It ain't that Stamford, Connecticut cold, but it's cold.
But I got to add in that. See, but this is what the Chief is not telling y'all. 25 years in Texas, I'll say 40 degrees is okay. Why? Not because they're warm, but they can see. Let that mercury go below 30 and the lights go out in Texas. And that's 100. The lights will go out and they'll be walking around cold in the dark. Chief, are you ready for that? It's coming in February.
Yeah, not only will it be cold walking around in the dark, we'll be fighting at the local grocery store. So that's just how it is in Texas. That's just how it is. There'll be no bread, no milk. I don't know why we buy bread and milk, but it's all gone. Can't find bread or milk anywhere. But first snowflake hits the ground, people lose their mind.
Let me do this.
Chief?
real quick, John.
Just want to tell you one thing about cold, Chief. Cold is when you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, but it's so cold that you don't get up. Welcome to our world. See, Stan used to be part of that world, but he moved out to Texas.
Nah,
and
that's
he
right.
refused to come back.
No, I ain't going back. I'm 59. Stan don't do cold. When you're 59, anytime you wake up in the morning, and two thoughts go through your mind while you're getting out of bed. You hear snap, crackle, pop, and you think breakfast is ready or shots fired. And all it is your knees. No, I'm getting old, and I'm good with it, and I relax with it. But I'm going to go, let's go over, because we got a guest up in the house. The DOC, Dr. Richard Broussard. What's up, bro? Glad you could join us.
So, family, it's been a long time, man. I'm just happy to be here. You know, I'm always present even when I'm not on with you all. So, man, I'm just happy to be back in the fold.
All right, brother. Now, before I get to all this, everybody sees I don't have, usually I have my behind the blue curtain hoodie on or sweatshirt, T-shirt, something like that on. And today I don't. I got on my Harrisburg OG Respected T-shirt. I'm about giving shout out, so I got my homeboy, good friend, you know, on the line right now that this came from, OG. Brother, good morning, thank you, and I appreciate the shirt, bro. So you come on, I'm showing you love, man. Come on.
What's up, brother?
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I know that, man, and good to see all the fellas up there. I ain't seen him in a minute though. I had a lot of stuff I've been doing. I see Jim got the beard going on over there. So, yeah, man. But the shirt, man, is it's just a little something that I designed up, man. Just sitting around doodling a little bit and designed that shirt, man. And this is show a little love and to our city and to the G's that was before me. And I know I got that title too, but that shirt's not about me. You know what I'm saying? It's about the respect from the guys before me, you know what I mean, and all over, you know what I'm saying? But even though I got the Harrisburg as a city, and then the 717 in red is the area code of the city, you know what I'm saying? So that's basically what it was about. And I made one shirt, and it was white, and I wore it, and I just put it, you know, I took a picture of a selfie and put it on Facebook, and everybody started jumping on like, yo, man, I like that shirt. And it went off the hook. But Jew Stan was the first one that wanted it in black. Once I did that black one, now it's really going off the chain, man. So it was like, you know, it wasn't even nothing that was planned. It was just something that I was just doing myself to pay homage back. You know what I mean? So it's all good.
Hey, I appreciate you, bro. And I appreciate everything you're doing there. Why are you here? Because this show's about lifting up people that are giving back. It ain't about none of us here. It's about giving back, you know. And see, you're doing some things up there still. You know, talk a little bit. Let's make it the Cal Homeless Show for 1 minute. You know, tell us what you're doing up there in Harrisburg, which God knows needs it.
Oh, well, right now, man, that's a good thing, because right now I'm involved with the Loop B&G, what is called the Left Out Organization Program. And it's a boys and girls club, you know what I mean, for kids from the age 6 to 18. And, you know, it's a nonprofit joint, you know what I mean, and I volunteer, you know, my time, you know what I mean, 3 days a week, and then all the events that we have but my main focus is on the older teens. You know, the boys and stuff that get ready to hit them streets and to hit life, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to give them some of this here good stuff to go out in the streets with, so they know what to do when they face with these challenges that they're going to see. And it's not if they're going to see it, it's when they're going to see it, you know what I mean? They got to know what to do. They got to know how to think quick to get themselves out of trouble or to prevent trouble, you know what I mean, to walk away. So my main focus is these teams right now, you know what I mean, and putting them on the right track. You know, we have speakers that come in and talk to them before, you know, we have an open gym for them and, you know, activities for them to do, you know, and I shout out to my brother, Anthony Burnett, you know, Duke. he's the one that we got under the wing doing it. So, you know, it's a good program. It's the Boys and Girls Club.
Let me ask you this, brother. What words can you give before we get on with the show? I got to ask you this because this is what I see the problem with a lot of proactive African-American or black, whichever word y'all want to choose, movements. How do you go home? I'm not talking about the organization. I'm talking about OG. How do you go home to your quiet place? And you know what you're putting in, you know what you're doing, you know where you want the program to go. And then when you see so many people who look like us, position and power and influence and can make a difference, yet they're not reaching out to Calum, they're not doing. Without names, what message do you give to them? Not just the ones in Harrisburg, but the ones in Chicago, in Dallas, in Miami, yes, in Houston, in Austin. What words can you give not just to the people who are doing the work, but to the ones who need to step up to the plate? And some of them are celebrities and are entertainers.
That's a good question. That's a good question, man. And, you know, and it doesn't even require a big long-termed-out answer. My answer for that is to keep it real. You know what I mean? Keep it real. And that's what our problems is with a lot of things. See, if you 100% into something, then you're going to be 100% and you don't have to worry about plan B. You know what I mean? Because you're putting all 100 in plan A. You know what I'm saying? The struggle is when you're undecided, whether you're in the streets, whether you're doing right, whether you're in an organization that help people, whether you're in a church. If you're 100% about that church, you're not going to struggle with the other stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like me, myself, I'm 100% about this. So when I go in to do what I do, I can come home just like I do, just like I left. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm 100 about it. I don't struggle in no area because I'm going to be in it or I'm not. The struggle comes when you're undecided in the middle. You don't know what side to go on. You know, you want to do the right thing, but you got your hand in somebody's pocket doing something else. You know what I'm saying? And that's where the struggle comes in at. You know what I mean? So if you're 100 about it all the way, it ain't no problem. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I look at it, you know? I'm 100%, so I don't have no struggle.
Before I let you go, brother, let me ask you this. If you're in Harrisburg, and don't just buy this shirt and walk around with it to say you got one. You know, if you ain't doing nothing, don't buy the shirt. But if you believe in the shirt and you're making a difference in Harrisburg, if they want to get one, Cal, where do they reach you? Where can they find you? Where can they get one of these shirts?
They can hit me on Facebook and Instagram. You know, my Facebook and Instagram name is Calvin Hallman, Cal Hallman. You can just come on here and hit me up on either one of them, and you can get it. That's all the information. That's all I got on how to contact me because I don't have all the other links and all that stuff. So just those two right there, you can get it.
No, that's fine and good because we make this work every week with duct tape and paper clips. So we definitely feel you.
Yes.
But as George once said, to each his reach. If I don't cop, it's not mine to have. Hello, Joe. You heard that before somewhere.
That's right.
But fucking dollars. You know, that's everybody's not going to understand that kind of that language.
That's what's up. But, Cal, appreciate you, brother. I'm going to leave your mic open. If you want to continue in the show, feel free to chime
all right.
in. We're going to advance this thing forward. Appreciate you,
okay,
brother.
John. Okay, John and Izzy and Joe, what up? I'd have never met Claire, so I went up to the rest of the fellas.
Good morning.
All right.
Let's go in. Where do we go in?
I'm being a stranger, bro.
All right. First thing on that, we got to go here first. We got to go to this topic first and you know, it's the elephant in the room, so we'll deal with it.
This morning, former Empire star Justice Smollett found guilty of lying to police about being the victim of a racist and homophobic attack. Jurors deliberating for 2 days before reading the verdict in a packed courtroom filled with Smollett's family. The actor showing no emotion.
Mr. Smollett had faked a hate crime and then lied to the police about it. And then... jury.
Millette spent 2 days on the witness stand telling jurors that two masked men attacked him in downtown Chicago in January of 2019, yelling racist and homophobic slurs and putting a noose around his neck.
Do you want to take it off or anything?
But the prosecution painting a much different picture, telling jurors it was all a lie and that Millette paid his acquaintances, the Osandiro brothers, $3,500 to orchestrate the whole thing. The brothers were the prosecution's star witnesses, testifying Millette gave them a $100 bill to buy supplies for the attack and wrote the check for them to carry it out. Millette, who didn't speak after the verdict, always maintaining his innocence.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I was accused of.
In the end, vindication for the Chicago Police Department, who publicly called the crime a hoax, even filing a lawsuit against Millette to recoup overtime pay spent on investigators working the case. Shortly after the verdict, the city releasing a statement saying the jury's findings of guilt convicting Justice Millette of criminal charges stemming from the incident confirms that the city was correct in bringing a civil lawsuit. The attorneys for the two brothers saying their clients are now vindicated too.
My clients, Ola and Bola Osundiro, could not be more thrilled and pleased with the result today.
Now the actor will have to wait for this final chapter to be written to see if he'll have to spend time behind bars for this real-life drama.
All right. That's juicy. Jesse, comments? Concerns, criticism.
Here, let me just step off into this right
now. Come on, Judge.
The real issue here is, at least for me, the amount of effort that was put into a hoax. Now, certainly, you know, you're going to have the ones that say, "Oh, look, you know, you get this overkill." It's not. He got the attention because he was a artist. He was a star. And believe it or not, this could have been handled a long time ago. But you got two people at fault here. You've got the state's attorney, who is disingenuous at best, and him. And I know some of the people that worked that case, and from the beginning, everybody knew it was bad. But because, and all of us on this page, you know, it's called a heater case. If you catch a heater, what do you do? Put all your resources in it because it's got to be solved. And when they came to the conclusion that it came to, there are a lot more names involved that people just don't want to hear. I won't go into any conspiracy theories, but there are a lot. This place, I mean, the names reached real high. And those people did not want to be embarrassed. And what they do, they kicked the can. But our state's attorney is at fault, and that's my opinion.
All right, Chief, I see you nodding. What you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with Joe. I mean, there was a considerable amount of time and resources put towards this, but, you know, and it is what it is. He's a liar. But what he did is he probably made it more difficult for a legitimate case to come forward because, you know, it's a selfish act perpetuated by whatever, you know, getting kicked off a show or whatever, just to remain relevant. That's at least my opinion. He did this to remain relevant. But the damage that he caused down the road makes it potentially more difficult for a legitimate case to come forward, right? And he doesn't even realize that. He doesn't even accept responsibility for it. So I got nothing for him. This is probably the last I'm going to say about him because we spent a lot of time and effort mm-hmm. putting this out, right? We put it out. We kept talking about it. It has been all over the news. And all you're doing is basically the guy's a liar. We keep pushing forward that he's this – drop it. Put him away. Put him in jail. Let him do his time. He's found guilty. Let's move on. Let's quit talking about this guy because he's done way more damage. He's done a hell of a lot more damage than he will ever admit or people will ever know.
You know, if I can call him something, Chief, I would say he's a black Ken as opposed to the Karens. He's a black Ken. Me, 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 me. Poor me.
Right.
And his poor me, and I forgot to give the disclaimer up front, if y'all got your kids in the room, you will hear colorful metaphors, agitated adjectives, better known as curse words. Jesse Smollett is full of bullshit. And a lot of taxpayer money was spent.
Yeah, that, and they need it while he's in serving his time. They give him some mental health counseling or something. Try to get him corrected a little bit.
He's going to be getting counseling. It ain't going to be
anywhere
else. Oh, my God.
Well, I say that, and we joke about it, but there's something there, and there's something going on. Why would you go through all that ridiculousness if there ain't something, going on? I mean, who comes up with something like that?
Narcissists. Exactly, but let's go back. We talk about Karens. We see their videos all the time. He fits that mold.
He does, and I say it all the time when I see those type of videos. I'm like, what makes you even think to even deal with the situation that way? I mean, again, I'm more along the lines of, if it's something that I see that I'm not or I don't like or whatever, I'm probably just going to keep on going. You do whatever you're going to do, man. I mean, unless it's because of the result of my job, I've got to intervene, but the rest of it, But anyway, it's narcissism, and he needs to get that stuff in check. And we continue to further his cause by talking about him on the news consistently every single day. It is a big deal, and I'm sure Joe offline could probably tell us some stuff involved in this case that makes your hair curl on who's involved. But you know what? And they need to do what they need to do to deal with those people as well, because there are a lot of folks that help push this narrative, this false narrative, and this is legitimately a false narrative, forward. And, I think those of us that truly believe in spirit and intent, when the case first came out and we hear that this hate crime has taken place against an individual, I think we were like, well, they need to go get those guys. They need to get all those people accountable for that. And then it turns around into this big old bucket of crap that everybody took on, right? And oh, my God, we knew early on. I mean, I knew early on. I wasn't even part of the case. just that hunch, that law enforcement gene I've got, I guess, instinct told me it was a bunch of BS. Facts started to come out probably day two, three, I was like,
but the first thing that told me that it was BS, the very first thing that clicked off in my head that told me that this guy is full of mess was when I saw the temperature. I'm not being stereotypical when I say this. I'm being factual. I'm not speaking for every individual, but black people do not like cold weather. That temperature up there. And you going to get a subway stop? Oh, please. Please. John?
Chief, I think you hit it on the head when you talked about remaining relevant. I think that with people starve for stardom, that even, even in death, when a lot of these rap artists or entertainers, they become more famous. And as long as they're in the news, is black publicity is good publicity for them. So, and it's a little different stand than I would say the Karens, which was going to be my point. You see all these Karens coming on and they calling the police, oh, he assaulted me. I've seen one where the lady said his pit bull attacked me and it was like a little chihuahua.
I saw it.
To touch it, right? But what happened to those people? What happened to all those people who are calling the police? You got three or four police cars pulling up to a crime that never took place.
Mm-hmm.
And if this guy wasn't a celebrity, we wouldn't even be discussing this crap.
Well, I will tell you that, at least in my line of work and where I have my span of control, if you lie, false report to a peace officer, we will arrest you. I'll just say right there, you come to my area, you file a fictitious report, we are going to get a warrant for your arrest. Now, whether they prosecute you or not, and in a case like this, just as you said, John, this is a big case. Joe touched on, it's a heater case that put all the resources available, and that's why you don't hear about some of these smaller cases that get prosecuted. So it's because this guy was, well, he was on, I don't even say he was famous, he was on TV. So you know, that's why it got the attention that it got. But there are many cases, I think, if we did the research, where those people that provide those false reports to law enforcement do eventually get arrested. I'll tell you right now, in our area, you will. There's no two ways about it. I ain't got time for this kind of nonsense and waste of taxpayer money and resources to deal with something that doesn't ever exist.
Now, you and Joe keep talking about the resources that was spent. I see so many men getting out of prison nowadays for rape cases. They didn't even commit. Why prosecutors don't put in the resources to make sure they're putting the right person in prison? Why is
there's no measure?
25, 30 years later, you find out this guy never committed rape. He can never re-sit back together in his life. You can't. There's no amount of money that can repay him for 30 years in prison for a crime that he didn't commit. For a guy that goes to prison for rape, is that and child molestation is the worst crimes you can be in prison for. And I can only imagine what some of these men suffer. Those people are worthy of talking about, not just Jesse or Juicy or whatever it is.
I'll say it before Joe, because I know Joe's the same. There's no accountability for the prosecutor. There's no line to hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. That's number one. So the way that we as law enforcement professionals need to look at it is we need to make sure that we have every base covered, every avenue closed to ensure whether we have the right person or we don't have the right person. Right, having sane exams done and completed. That becomes very important, and of course, nationally, that was a huge issue, that sane exams were completed, and they weren't tested for DNA through CODIS or anything like that. So, you know, you need to ensure that all that stuff is done so you can get a base profile. And again, we could do a whole other show just on this particular topic, but there's a lot of stuff there. But as far as prosecutors putting forth all their effort, there's really nobody to hold them accountable, technically, whether they do or whether they don't, and that's an issue. Whereas for me, I mean, there's a line there. I can be held accountable. Those folks can't.
So let me jump in real quick. There's two things that we're bypassing here. The first one is more important than the law. You got to have the right people in those units. Now, if you go back and listen to any of our conversations, you've heard me say from day one, the detective divisions across this country are the most important divisions anywhere. Listen again. The detective divisions across this country, I don't care if you're a detective in New York, Hewitt, Chicago, whatever, they make the case. If you don't have the right people in those divisions, this is what you wind up with. Have I investigated cases where I've gotten people released? Yes. Have I sent people to prison? Yes. But at the same time, listen to what I said first. I have stopped people from going because you had the right people there. I was trained right. I had great supervisors. I had great direction. You can't say that about all these units, but that's why they're elite units. If you go back and look at all the cases being tried or retried in cases, they go back to detectives. Listen to me. Detectives, it's important, extremely important, that those units are diverse, clean, and have a reputation for doing the job correctly. Again, look at Serpico. What was he? He was a detective. Narcotics unit. Detectives. Now we talk about homicides, rapes, violent crimes. But let me again digress one thing. In this Molette case, the one thing that we didn't talk about, the jury did their right job. The jury did their job. We need to thank those people for what they've done and how they did it. All these cases that are coming forward are all based on jury decisions. Thank God somebody had decision enough to say, this is bullshit. And you're going to pay for it. But it was the jury that did, not the prosecutor. Now, we talked about this thing called qualified immunity. Again, we've talked about this. We've hammered this home. Lawyers, prosecutors in particular, and judges do not give prosecutors the bad decisions. Who does? Police officers.
And you know what, Joe? No, they
want that job.
No, you know what? And I'm not going to give them a qualified break because you know what? I'll tell you. They run and hide behind qualified. Two things. I'm glad you opened this up because we'll go there. The police, modern policing today hides behind two things, qualified immunity and police unions. They run and hide behind it. How many people are we seeing today finally in prison when they've done something egregious? We go back and look at their history, where all of us on this panel would agree they should have been fired. Who saved their ass? The police union. Well, gee, that's funny, because what does every city council person want to endorse them? The police union. Who's the first person the mayor goes after for an endorsement? The police union. What do the Senate run nominees, the Congress nominees, you know, the governor, the mayor? The police unions, not the officers. And there's a difference between the police union and the police officers. And as an example, I can tell you, when you saw the police unions back Donald Trump, I can tell you now, not every police officer in that particular union backed Donald Trump. So that decision was made. And I'm not disagreeing with you. But for the listeners, there are two entities within policing you're fighting when you deal with corrupt police, which are not the majority. The majority don't speak up because they're afraid to, because of what the department does to them. Because when you go against the blue culture, even the black officers, hello, black officers who want to speak up, when you do, guess what? You ain't fighting white officers. Ones ain't going to back you neither. 100, fact, experience talking right here. Listen to what I'm saying. But you find that when you get these badass officers, look at Chauvin's record. Who saved Chauvin's ass? The police union did. Who is the city council beholden to? The police union. Who is the DA beholden to? The police union. Who is the mayor beholden to? The police union. Why? Because what was the first union that chief? We look at all these elections, can step up there and say, hey, guess who's supporting me? It's the police union. And so until the police union says to itself, you know what? First off, what is our first priority as a police union representing our officers? We need to survive. What is killing us? Citizens ain't killing us. Suicide is. But the police union is quiet about that part. Why are we retiring and committing suicide? Mental health. The chiefs ain't talking about it. You know, the cities are not talking about it. The unions aren't talking about it. Why not? So when officers pay their money into these unions, which aren't free, I don't care if it's $7.50 a month. Multiply that by 25, 30, you know, 35, 40 years of input, and you've got nothing to show for it. And that's a whole different show, and I'm sorry I opened that can of worms, because we can go down there.
Hey,
go ahead,
Chief. I just want to address what Joe was talking about, those units, specifically the detective units. The other thing I wanted to point out is they cannot be number driven. Can't be number driven.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about that. Departments can't be number driven, period.
But specifically
that area, it's not about how many people we prosecute or how many people we arrest or anything like that. It's about quality of work. And you know, you need to have, when that work is done, it needs to go and flow up a chain and down a chain for decision making. So multiple people look at that. And that's what Joe's talking about. You get the good people in there making good decisions, and when it flows up and it's right, then we push forward on it.
But Chief, my problem with police unions and cities is this. I understand the police union, what it stands for, what it's supposed to represent. And the cities recognize the police union, and they enter into collective bargaining and whatever else that the unions do with the city. But then when you've got a department that has a Broken Cactus police union. But then you also, as a city, recognize the Black Police Officers Union of Broken Cactus. You recognize that union. They may not have the power that the total departmental unit has, and some of the people in the Black organization may be part of the recognized organization. But for the city to recognize that the existence of that separate unit, that separate entity in policing, and not come to the realization of, if we've got 25, 50, or 100, whatever the size, officers over here that are minority officers, that for whatever reason felt they need to separate from the department union to develop their own, why is the city saying, what is it about the main union that is not addressing these people's concerns. But then the city doesn't address their concerns either. Go ahead, Joe.
I think you can.
I'm not confused.
I think we have to clarify that. First of all, there's only one bargaining unit. So let's get that clear.
Right.
There are other organizations. We've got the Chicago. I think they've got Slick. They've got the Black Officers, Noble. You've got the German American. You've got the.
But are they recognized, Joe? Are they recognized? Are they recognized?
Yeah. They are recognized.
Okay, if they are recognized.
Bargaining unit.
Right.
Let me finish.
Go ahead. Because we're going to disagree on this one.
Bargaining hand of the police officer.
And I say, but Joe, I say to that, that's bullshit, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if you're the main union and you've got members splintered off into subsections, and you as a union refuse to recognize that you have an internal issue, if all these subsections divide from the police union to form their own unions to address their grievances, that should say to you as a union, you're not doing it. So if the union is not doing
it, I get what you're saying. I think, and again, I'm gonna go way down the rabbit hole, but that one recognized union, I think legally under employment, federal employment law, they can only have one recognized
right.
union. And so that's a hindrance right there. That ties your hands to recognize. Now, what you're saying about having splinter factions of unions take over or become an issue, and it's because of an issue. I will tell you, I'm gonna get a little personal, but back in my former agency, and I'm not experienced. I don't have the agency size as Joe, right? So my experience hasn't dealt with, you know, these multiple units of labor unions. But and in Texas, we don't have labor unions. We have police associations, right? We're non-labor union, non-union state. But anyway. It's the same thing. So the one main unit that we did have split off and became we had the Black Police Officers Union at my former agency that was under Noble come basically start their own unit. Well, then we recognized that was a problem. So I understand what you're saying, Stan. There was something that the main union was not representing for this group of people, so they felt that they had split. So we worked pretty hard and diligently to get us together, even though they remained separate. They were still part of the group and had a very loud voice and say in what we did and how we operated. Fortunately, where I'm at now, we got one, and it's got pretty much everybody in it. I guess. I don't know. We don't really have much to do with them because they're pretty low-key, and I talk to their president, and, you know, we work with stuff. So I don't have that fight that most places have when they show up. I think we have a pretty great relationship and get business done, and I think that's telling because we're not in the news fighting the union, I guess. But you've got a very valid point, Stan. It's why is it that they have – why people feel that they have to split? I can't speak for that. You'd have to grab somebody that probably has done that in the past. But it's most likely because they're not being represented well by whatever that main union is. That would be my biggest guess.
Exactly. Izzy, you want to jump in here? I see you tapping into bed.
The smoke coming off his head.
Yeah,
I'm just writing notes to keep track of every so I can make a point for everything that we've been talking about here. You guys are taking us all over the place.
Well,
going back to what John was saying in terms of the efforts to keep you know people innocent people accused of rape out of jail, that definitely needs to be addressed. But the one thing I will say is that if you're the right class. And definitely if you're the right color, they do a really great job of keeping rapists out of jail. They do a fantastic job of keeping rapists out of jail. I will say, again, when it comes to policing, now, again, there's varieties. There are good departments. Joe's definitely an example of that. But I will say that across the board around the country, police don't have a great track record in terms of investigating rape cases.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the departments that have thousands of rape kits just backlogged, unlooked at. I've got people I've interviewed who work for, in New York, we have people who go to the hospitals to help rape victims communicate with the authorities and stuff like that. And they are constantly reporting that police departments have a bad habit of sending very large men to go and investigate these cases and talk to these victims, and they immediately have a very persecutorial behavior towards these victims. So they don't have a great job. It depends on which unit you are. I guarantee you they are good units, but I'd also argue that those good units probably have a decent amount of women in there as well that are handling a lot of these cases. So they don't have a good track record. But then when we talking about the whole class issue, connecting to the Jussie Smollett thing, and I'll say this, there was a Black Lives Matter came out and wrote a letter about Jussie Smollett in response to the verdict. And they're tying into the whole conspiracy idea that he was framed, that it was a cover-up by the Chicago PD, the whole thing.
Yeah, that's bullshit, but yeah.
It is. It's dangerous, and it's bullshit. It's ridiculous. But then this ties into the class thing, because Jussie Smollett is a fairly wealthy man, which is why this case has gone as far as it's gone, because how many, especially Black people, who are convicted of crimes, get this type of trial, get this type of procedure? He was convicted, and he was allowed to go home, and he's going to have to go back for resentencing, and he's not going to see prison time. He's going to get probation,
yeah.
He's going to get community service, and that's what he's going to get. And like Joe said, he's probably going to make money off of this whole proceeding in some way or another. So class enters into a lot of these situations of how they get prosecuted. And then when it comes to unions, they do a great job defending bad officers and a terrible job of protecting the good ones. I've interviewed whistleblowers who have come out, and their unions have abandoned them to defend the officers that they are outing for misconduct. And
hello Shannon Spaulding.
Mm-hmm. What'd you say?
Hello, Shannon Spaulding.
Ryan Spaulding. And they've had to go to these smaller branched off organizations to get the representation that they needed that should be provided by the major union, which is never provided. So I think unions are having a lot of trouble shifting to doing the right thing across the board. They spend a lot of time protecting the bad officers and very little time protecting the good ones. And I think I caught up with you all now.
Okay, let me do this real quick. Let me go to a caller, 314 area code 4953. Good morning.
Well, why come? How you doing, Stan? How come there had to be a special prosecutor on Jussie Smollett? Couldn't Kimberly Fox handle it herself?
No, hell no. No,
the original prosecutor, she recused herself. The state prosecutor, she recused herself from the case because of some sort of conflict of interest.
Why come the chief of police said that if he had apologized, he would have let him go? You know the police chief that was having this back and forth with Beetlejuice or Lori Lightfoot? He was found drunk, passed out drunk in his car. What was his name, Johnson?
You know, let me, brother, I'll say this about chiefs, and I'm not talking about the one here. I'm certainly not talking about all of them. I'm going to talk about the position and that which the public perceives. Chiefs are what you all see as non-police officers. And then as officers, we see what they do, this extra, and we also see what they don't do that they're paid to do. And I think that too many police chiefs in this country have become unelected politicians who weigh the special interest. They may not necessarily have a Benjamin going in their back pocket, but a lot of them want to be the assistant city manager.
What's the name of that police chief who just got fired in Miami? Acevedo?
Yeah, Chief Acevedo.
Yeah, Acevedo.
But see, too many chiefs have, and not every, but too many of them, have this desire to please. And where I'm from, and Joe's municipality is different. Where I'm from, you have an assistant city manager over police and fire. That person is the boss of the police chief. That person is beholden to the city manager, who listens to the mayor and city council. So when all the special interests start raining down their gifts that they want under this tree, what is the chief going to do? Tell them, no, I can't, because I've got homeless people who don't have food or don't have a warm place to stay? That's a good chief would, in theory, but we don't see that today. We see chiefs that are politicians.
in this case, he said, and he's written in the paper, that he would, if Justice Mueller had only apologized for what he'd done, he would have let him go. You know, another thing that pissed me off with this guy,
let me inject this guy. I'm going to let you finish, but I got to inject this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this other badass, sorry-ass, excuse for a sheriff, one of my favorite people, and I know Joe's too, David Clark, who stood on the steps of a pre-insurrection without the physical act, who never, and I looked at his pictures, and I would challenge you, go look Sheriff David Clark up on Bing, Google, whatever you want. He's no longer sheriff. Thank God folks paying to the citizens voted him out. Google him, and then go to images. Now, this is a black sheriff. And it's amazing because I think there are only out of the hundreds of pictures of him actually not on horseback looking like a overseer, where he's interacting with the black community. But when he's with the white community, oh, he's off the horse. He got badges up his front, down his back, along his neck, down the side. So, I mean, when we talk about bad chiefs or bad sheriffs, let's get beyond the optics and get into what they do. This guy did nothing. And I understand what you're saying about the chief up there in Chicago. I don't know it. Well, I know him from his time in Dallas. And Joe and I have had vast discussions. But we can bring all the chiefs you want in. And this guy, yes, he's a Republican. And he wasn't worth crap. And never did anything.
Well,
but I'm going to let you get.
Well, see, the thing is about Justice that pissed me off, he tried to make it sound like he had some white males that was trying to lynch him with an old piece of Christmas wrapping string around his neck. And they supposed to have had MAGA hats, which would have been an insult to me because I was a Trump supporter. But most importantly, pardon me?
Oh, you, yeah, was? You were? You're not anymore?
Well, I'm not. I didn't say I was not anymore. I said he said that these people had MAGA hats on. Hell, I got a MAGA hat. Well, here's another thing that people didn't catch up on. That night, January 29th, 2019, in Chicago, one of the coldest nights on records in 34 years. It got down to like 30, 34 below zero. And he said that somebody threw some liquids on him. Well, hell, bleach itself freezes at 19 degrees Fahrenheit. I learned that when I was in elementary school in my science class.
I wonder why some people didn't pick up on it. Brother, me and you and Jesse, we're not disagreeing, but I'm going to say this. January 6th, 2021, was cold as hell, too. Now, where are all the MAGA hat people at? We're not going to, that's a whole other show, but they all seem to be in Washington.
I mean, one thing I want to say is that you said, like, optics, in the Jussie Smollett thing, and we have to move on and stop talking about this, but in the Jussie Smollett thing, the optics, and it goes back to the optics in the class, because what he just described, I don't know if that happened or not, but if that chief of police gave him that opportunity, that is because he has money, and that is because he is
That's
a public
right.
figure. Nobody else is getting opportunities to just apologize for a crime and then get let out the door. And it all comes into that. Like, none of this stuff is happening if he wasn't rich and well-known.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting offered. The case was originally dropped by the prosecutor. The state prosecutor said she had a conflict, and she let him off as long as he returned the $10,000 bail amount.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he gave them $10,000, and then they let the case go, which is why they had to bring in the special prosecutor to open up the case again. This guy was given ample opportunity, and it was because he was wealthy and well-known.
Well, he ain't wealthy. He might have been well-to-do. But it also smells of another culprit, and that's Barack Obama there in Chicago.
Okay, well,
I'll let you guys see it with it.
Yeah, brother. I mean, I don't want to go down a whole political rabbit hole here.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't need it. But I just wanted to put those points out there because they're necessary. And, Stan, I'll try to forward you that newspaper that talked about him, the chief, that is.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you. Go ahead, Big John, and we're going to move.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Nobody else on the show. Yeah, the thing is, I wanted to add, too, was even if a chief decided that he didn't want to bring charges, it's the prosecutor's responsibility whether he want to bring charges or not. Because we talked on the show about what is the duty of a judge. We need to have a discussion of what is the prosecutor's job. Now, we sat here and talked about a judge as a referee, but a prosecutor represents the citizens of this city. So if there's a crime against the citizen, the prosecutor's job is to bring charges. It's not the chief of police. If the chief of police provides the evidence, well, Jim, you speak on it. You better speak on it than me.
Yeah, we're the ones that enforce law. We don't prosecute. It's simple. Whether I want to prosecute or not want to prosecute, it doesn't matter. I'm not the one that's going to prosecute it. I provide the information to the prosecutor, and then they make the decision on how it goes forward. That's the system.
Let me get Claire in here real quick before we go to the next topic, because she's been waiting. I know she got a plethora. Come on.
Well, I was just going to say what the chief just said about basically getting a slap on the wrist from the chief by saying all you have to do is apologize and we would have just let you go. Well, that's an insult to the entire community, dude, because you're just saying, oh, that's okay, just don't do it next time. No, that's like, you need to be persecuted just like everybody else, doesn't matter how much money you have. And the problem I feel like with this Jesse guy is that he took a minority group and he victimized himself as a person of the minority group, regardless of whether he actually is or not.
He pimped him. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, he victimized himself as one of them, and then said that he was lynched, said that he was, I mean, just jumped, basically. And that, I mean, he just threw a lot of people under the bus that aren't able to come forward now because of his selfish act of staying relevant.
All right. Before we move to the next topic, Doc Rich, did you want to get some closer comments on Jesse before we go?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, at the end of the day, I know Mr. Joe understands all the nuances of the trial, I don't. But at the end of the day, Jesse is the centerpiece of the trial, you know. And then the historical context of what the noose represents, you know, growing up in the Deep South, my mother being a sharecropper's daughter, and even in high school having segregated farms when I graduated in the 90s, you know, it's just a slap in the face, you know, to the black community. And it's just, you know, it's painful, you know, because it could have been a trial where whatever they staged, it could have been without the noose, you know, but they took it to the extreme level of, you know, introducing the noose into whatever they were trying to, you know, concoct for as their story. And it's really shameful. It's shameful, and it really pisses me off, you know. That's how I feel about it. And, you know, and then he doesn't want, you know, the N-word used in the trial. You know, that's just totally ridiculous. You know, you don't want the N-word used, but then you use the noose, you know, and it's just, man, it's time to move on.
Bro, that was deep. That was deep.
And it should piss everybody off. And everybody should, anybody that's in his camp should abandon him until he publicly acknowledges that he lied and repents. That's my opinion. And he's not going to. He's so full of himself that he truly in his mind believes that this truly happened, even though everybody knows it. I mean, when you're on late night TV, and I think it was Tracy Morgan said he got a job, a role on what was the show that they were on?
Empire.
So he got a role on Empire as long as he didn't. He could have it as long as he didn't stage a hate crime. So when you're on late night TV saying that, everybody knows it's BS. So everybody should just abandon this guy and move on down the road
forward
with their lives, because he's just a liar.
Let me do this. hang on, John. We're going to transition, bro. No, go ahead real quick.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that we didn't touch on is that this affects two communities. We're talking about black, the credibility of black community, and then there are the gay community that, you know, who came out for them. So it's not just offensive to black people.
Right.
But, I would love to hear from the gay community how they felt about what he did because they came out for him.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this, bro. If you're in the LGBTQ community, and if I forgot some of the other alphabets, it's not disrespect. It's just that it seems to grow longer and longer and longer. And I'm just simplistic. I like people. I don't need your titles and your sexual preference. But if you're offended and if you feel some kind of way about this decision, 646-716-4621, let me move out the way. You can see it. It's right there. Press 1 when you can hear the show if you want to comment. And I'll put you on. John, great point. And we're going to transition into the next part of the show because I got something I want to hear from everybody on this one. This one can't go by the wayside.
I'm going to the store, sir.
Bravo 15, we have one gunshot victim. Officers at code 4.
Bravo, what type is code 4 for us to move in at this point?
Bravo 15, I'll need you. That's your code 3. We've got a lot of people here.
10-4, stand by just one. Is it okay for us to move in? Is the seat secure?
Yeah, please code 4, us to move in.
All right. I'm a reserve comment. I'm not even coming in on this because I don't have enough money right now to fill the curse jar up, so I'm gonna leave it alone. But the floor is open.
I want to just when this comes out, after this came out, there were the usual things about training and just what we could, like the Band-Aid solutions that I'm talking about. This is textbook why we need to improve our hiring and recruitment methods and policing because these people should not be allowed to be, this guy should not be a cop, should not have been one, shouldn't have been allowed in right out the gate. And the fact that all these people can keep getting into our departments is because hiring and recruitment is shit. It's terrible. It's a funnel system that acknowledges that you allow in crap and you expect the psych exams, the hiring person, the police, and then the academy to filter them all out. And it doesn't work.
I'm going to chime in after that because I hadn't seen the video, but now that I have, excuse my language, but what the fuck? This guy shot a man in an electric wheelchair. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Is that what I saw?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mobility scooter, yeah.
In the back.
Okay. Yeah.
Claire, can I interrupt you for a second?
Please. Yeah, go ahead.
Because I want everybody, before you even continue, I want everybody listening to this show right now or we'll see it later to understand that this isn't just somebody who used to be a police officer giving their opinion. I did 25 years. I never shot anybody. But the lady you're listening to right now had. She has been in that life or death scenario. So, Claire, me, Joe, the chief, right now, your observation means more than anything we will ever offer to this show. Please continue. I'm sorry for the interruption.
Well, then y'all just sit back.
Oh, yeah. Take as much time as you need.
Well, just after watching that video, the first thing I noticed was the radio traffic. The officer had almost no tone in his voice showing that he just shot someone in the back that was in a motorized scooter. Mm-hmm. Shot someone, period, but had no change in his voice at all. It was completely across the board, completely just a normal day radio traffic, which blew my mind because if you've ever been in a shooting, it's you get a little bit strung up, and at least I did, whenever you shoot someone. I didn't shoot anyone in the back, to me, that's pretty much murder because the guy doesn't clearly, the guy's not turned around. He doesn't, from the video, it doesn't look like he knows that he has a gun to his back. I may be wrong. Again, excuse my language, fucked up.
But Claire, you're the expert here right now. And you know me, you're like my baby girl to me. Only if you want to. You don't have to give any graphic details. But you've been through this. And then, Joe, I want to hear from you because, Joe, you've been in a few shootings. You know, Claire, when you just saw this, and people will take, and this is what bothers me with police shootings, people take them and they put them into these left and right baskets. They don't understand variables and environment mm-hmm. and all the things that came in. And when you did the show initially where you talked about yours,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the things you said on yours that I was impressed by, that I knew of it, I didn't pull up the reports and read it or nothing, but I knew of it and I only knew what you told me. But when you were describing it, and you said something, you said, I could hear the knife going into the guy. I mean, that puts, even as an officer, much less a civilian, but as an officer, that really put me there. And you've been through it. You live with it. You call me. We talk. And even today, you have issues with it. And I want to make this point clear, mm-hmm. not with your decision to do what you did. But you have to live with, and this is why we look at the videos and we all have our opinions of what the officer should or shouldn't do. I'm at 25 years. I can't question what you did or criticize what you did. I've never been there. And you came out in 2 years and all of a sudden you're there. It's real world for you. You know, if you want to talk and you take as much time as you want, but string your personal experience according to your incident, how it relates to this one. And I'm so glad and just how fate works. You just saw this video for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it evoked some stuff in you when you saw it.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is just perspective. Both in my shooting and this one, Unfortunately, there's only body cam footage. I don't know the specifics on this case. Like I said, I just saw it.
Okay, he was the guy that was shot was suspected of shoplifting. He was supposedly had pulled out a knife on a Walmart employee when confronted. He was attempting to go back into the store in the motorized scooter.
I see. Yeah. Well, so in my case, that changes things. But still just looks really bad on camera. But in my case, there was a suspect that also had a knife. I didn't know it prior to getting to the scene, but it was displayed to me. Whenever I did arrive, and then I gave multiple commands, which I didn't. I did hear from this guy to not go back into the store, don't go back into the store. Mine was drop the knife. I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback this guy so much, but just in my shooting, it was just a little bit different. But the guy basically took off on me a little bit of the same way, gave him multiple commands. My guy tried to get in the back of somebody's car. Somebody else jumped on him, and he started, the suspect with the knife started stabbing the guy. And like Sam said earlier, I heard it, and that's when I reacted. And in this guy's shooting, I don't know what it was that set him off. I don't know if it was the fact that the guy was, like, through the threshold. I don't know what his point was where, if this happens, this is what I'm going to do. But I don't know.
If I could say, you know, we all, as officers, Joe's done it, the chief does it, you know, we play scenarios in our head all the time. If this happens, I'll do this. We're always doing that because we don't know. It's our way of testing us on what will happen. We don't know. But in this case, when I saw this case and I researched it and I read it, the officer was working an off-duty part-time job at Walmart. That's first off. I don't know this man. I will not question his manhood. But, I mean, if you got a pocket knife and a motorized scooter and standing there where I can beat your ass if I need to, I'll just kick the scooter over and you're pretty much done. I got a taser. I got an aspirin. I got chemical spray. I got all these things I can apply. And in that video, none of that went through this officer's head. And I have to really go back to what Izzy talks about, which is quintessentially the point in our hiring practice. We are not looking at people we're hiring. This is what we're doing. We're good old boy. Grandfather was a cop here. His dad was a cop here. His uncle was a cop here. I buy cows from him. See, we good old boy this. I sat on an interview board where I denied the hiring of an applicant. And I heard from everybody how great I think he is or this and that. I said, he can't fight, number one. He told me in the interview he's never been in a fight. So I represent patrol. I'm going to trust you. Well, we fight every night or could potentially fight every night. And if you can't fight, you may take somebody's life. Not because they need to die, but because you can't fight.
Yeah.
I'm not saying everybody has to be an MMA fighter. But what I'm saying is we in policing had this poster model of the officer we want to put on the street. And you know what he never has? He never has dreadlocks. He or she never has brown skin. He or she is never LGBTQ. He or she is never atheist. Policing is not our personal core definition of America. It is an encompassing of the public that we're hiring this guy to serve. This guy was not ready to be a cop. I don't know him. I don't know. I haven't researched his hiring practices. But I would sure hate to have been one of the people on his, if they're civil service, on his board that hired that guy.
If they had one.
Yeah, because...
Well,
go ahead, Craig.
The other point I was going to make is that, yeah, that means you have, when you're hired as an officer, you're shown a lot of freaking tools that you can use, not just a gun.
Mm-hmm.
The gun is the last resort. And like Stan said, this guy's in a freaking, in a motorized scooter. Why is there no, when he's passing, well, I guess what I meant was, what's that point where he said, I'm going to shoot him because he's going past that threshold? Why was there no other thought in his mind of other things that he could do?
But Claire,
he was vapor locked.
Right, and I guess that's the difference in my shooting versus this guy, is I had someone that was being stabbed, and there was an immediate threat. There was nothing else to do other than shoot the immediate threat to stop that other threat from happening to the innocent person. This guy was rolling into a Walmart, I assume. I'm sure that the officer could have put hands on him and stopped him, tased him. You can tase him out of the wheelchair. You don't have to shoot a
big guy. Thank you.
The guy had just had hip surgery. You could have shoved him out of that wheelchair, and he wouldn't have been able to get up off the ground. Exactly. I'll put forward another thing, Claire, and this goes back to the hiring thing. I'm going to wager that you are just a better person than this guy is, because no amount of training is going to make a bad person a better police officer. That guy goes into the department bad. You're not going to improve him with our training. You might teach him how to better hide his bad potential,
right,
but you're not going to train him out of being a bad, incompetent, excitable person.
That's the point that I wanted to make about the radio traffic. That's the first thing I heard, is because there was no excitement in his voice. It was almost like a normal day for him. He was expecting it. Like, he was thinking, well, if I ever get into a shooting, it's not that big of a deal. And that's not the mindset of an officer that you want on the streets. You don't want to ever have to be in that situation. You want to be ready if that ever happens, if that ever were to be a problem, if you're ever faced with that. You want to be able to pull that trigger if you have to. But you don't want to hire a person that is more than willing to go out and shoot somebody. There's the difference. And that man, I don't know him, but based on the radio traffic, based solely on that and the emotion in his voice, he didn't have very much.
But
it seems to me as if he was okay or ready to go out and shoot somebody if he needed to.
Well, that also connects to past hiring. You also have to look at what type of recruiting campaign was this department using? What do their advertisements look like? What type of officer are they asking for?
Mm-hmm.
And how are they advertising the job?
Yep.
Because if you're advertising the job like an action movie or a video game, you're going to get people that want to be in a video game or an action movie and are going to respond as such.
That's what it seemed like, exactly.
Yeah. And if you're going to be in departments I've reported on this, where officers are reported having 8 hours of de-escalation versus 150 hours of range training, what else is going to happen?
But as I've oftentimes said, you know, let's look at, if you want to understand the mentality of your particular police department where you live, ladies and gentlemen, get off your ass, do a public information request, and get the police budget and look at where money is being spent in police training. Look at what they're spending the money on. And when you get this budget and you don't know where to look, go straight to that section that says patrol, not detectives. Because they're going to get suit and tie allowance, and they're going to get coffee fund money. No, Joe, I'm trashing y'all. Because you know what? Detectives pick
we
up.
We can't even get
you know,
in our allowance.
Yeah. Detectives pick up the paperwork that the officers did under threat. And then they go out and they go under, everything's calm now. I'm just saying, Joe, I got to get, I'm a straight line street officer, 25 years, midnight. So I'm giving my people mad up. Because, you know, we go do it where everybody's scared of the dark. And not even city council people, city managers, mayors, nobody else will come ride on the midnight shift. They'll go out in the day where they can do this. So I'm going to give them their ups. That being said, you know, go to the citizen, pull that budget and go look at how much money's being spent on patrol. Not drug enforcement, not SWAT. Not the traffic unit, not the neighborhood narcotics unit. Not, that's bullshit. Forget them. You look at patrol, because that's who you're seeing on the streets every day. And you're likely to encounter. Now, when you look at patrol, you have to go back and say, well, there's three shifts on patrol. Okay?
So let's take this money number and divide it by three. Then let's go to one particular shift. Let's say midnights for the sake of my argument, which I pay for this, so it's going to be my argument. Midnights. We got this number. How much money is allocated to that midnight shift for patrol? Now, on the midnight shift, you have, let's say, three squads. We had three squads or three platoons, A, B, C, for District 1, District 2, District 3. Within each district, you have 15 officers. 15, that's 45 altogether. You got 15 officers in each district. So all this money goes to Midnight Patrol for training. Now you've got 45 officers. Let's say it came, stands, and says, I was a senior ranking person on Midnight. Above all the sergeants, the only person that had more time than me was my commander. So I can get whatever I want. If you got officers who are putting in for things like de-escalation training, conflict resolution training, problem-oriented policing, problem-solving policing, and they're being told, well, we're going to give it to officer so-and-so, who has more time on midnights than you. What is he dealing with? Street combat, urban survival. The extreme. So interdepartmentally, how do we go back to these officers where the training isn't based solely on seniority? But I think as a department head, I would look at the effectiveness of this training the individual wants. If I got a one-year rookie that wants advanced de-escalation training, conflict resolution training, statement analysis training, Joe will tell you statement analysis is one of the things lacking in policing that needs to be done. But see, he's 1 year. He don't need that. This guy wants to take advanced combat shooting from vehicles. See, but citizens don't know because you don't, and this is on citizens, not the police department. You don't pull the budget. When you pull it and see all this bullshit in policing, because you're going to see a ton of it, community policing and all that, and I love community policing, but community policing ain't patrol. Because if you got 5 officers, 7 officers, 20 officers doing community policing, that ain't community policing. That's bullshit. It's crime prevention. It ain't community policing. Community policing covers the whole department. Chief, am I wrong?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, we teach it. We've said it before in the class. You know, I teach the patrol operations for the Basic Peace Officer Academy in the state of Texas, and there's a line in there that says every peace officer is a community police officer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, and that's an old line that's been in there for, I think, even back when I went to the academy. So the truth is there. We just, a lot of agencies just don't hold to that standard. I want to go back to this video because when I saw it, and I saw it, and you know, instantly knew that there was something up with it. And it's pretty obvious. I didn't really watch the video clip until this morning prior to the show. And I'm going to go back to what Izzy had to say. I don't know the guy. I don't know the department. I don't know the standards. But I know that it's going to come out that he never should have been a cop to begin with. Never should have been hired. That's going to be an easy slam dunk. When we start talking about alternatives and things that can be done as a result, and I'm not going to go into this, well, we couldn't have done this and we couldn't have done that, because as Izzy pointed out, those are just kind of Band-Aid measures to, you know, deal with this. But in this type of situation, and actually he stole a toolbox from Walmart when they asked for it back, and I didn't know if it really wasn't clear enough to me whether it was the employee or the officer that asked him to return the toolbox, but he produced a knife, said, you can have this. But, you know, again, common sense isn't so common. The guy's in a mobility scooter. So I just wanted for myself to research how fast a mobility scooter is. And there are some that are pretty quick, but the majority on average are 8 miles per hour, which is basically a sprint, I guess, for most people that you know, could have kept up with it. And there were many alternatives, but and I'm not going to try to make light of the situation, but we have an off-duty officer, right? He's working what? Security? What was he working previous to that? What's the fatigue factor there? Mm-hmm. Right. In a lot of agencies, when they work off duty, because we talked about, well, there are alternatives. You got your baton, you got your spray, you got your taser. Is he allowed to have that equipment when he works an off-duty gig? Because there are a lot of agencies that do not allow you to have that city equipment when you're working an off-duty gig, which I think is ridiculous. We allow that to be provided because, again, if you're working in a security law enforcement capacity in an off-duty job, then you need to have the tools available that you use basically all the time to stop an incident just like this from occurring. And I can't see from the video whether he has them. I have no idea. So that's a little more research that I'll have to look into. But I do want to bring up, and I'm not making excuses in any way, shape, or form. This is a bad shoot. He's going to be prosecuted for it, hopefully, should be prosecuted for it. So there's no way I'm making an excuse for the actions of this particular officer because they were very, very poor. That's without saying and filling up the curse jar, that's the best way I can say that. So... but the fatigue issue becomes a topic of discussion for us about fatigue and human performance. So if you do any human performance training or you look at, the mind versus performance and what sleep does and how important sleep is to people, there's a big concern about this off-duty gig, right? When we're doing the off-duty jobs where officers are working 12-hour shifts, and then they leave their job and they transition and they do 10 more hours at an off-duty job in order to support for their family. I get it. We should be paying the officers more. I understand. But even if you're in an agency that doesn't pay officers well, right, and then those officers need to go to the agencies that do pay well. But if that wage is not there, agencies and administrators really need to pay attention to what their people are working. Because when you're going through a day of stress, right, and that cortisol raises in your body and that adrenaline spikes here and there, and it happens a lot more in bigger agencies and very busy places, that has physiological effects on the body. The cure for that is sleep. We suck at sleeping. Then you add in alcoholism and addiction and all these other things that occur within our profession, and it just compounds these problems into poor decision-making. And so that kind of goes back to that mental health that we talk about for these officers. So, you know, you as an administrator really need to pay attention to these things and have limits on how much work can be done in a day. And agencies that are proactive in this area, and it makes officers mad, and that's kind of tough, just tough. You cannot work 24 hours a day, and then I have you expect you to come in and perform at your optimal level the next day. It's just not going to happen. So you have to be – you have to hold the line on that. You have to tell them, hey, you're going to work this shift, and that's it. You cannot do any more than 16 hours or 14 hours a day in that uniform, under my licensing for the state. You can't do that because your decision-making becomes crap. The evidence is there. All you got to do is look at it. It is there. It is proven. It's proven time and time again. Now, I am not justifying what this guy did. But it's something that we as law enforcement need to look at and really pay attention to because, you know, the scientific data is there. It is absolutely 100% there. Now, alternatives to this thing, I mean, again, and actually when he stole the toolbox, he left the Walmart, rode his scooter down, and obviously he's not doing 8 miles an hour because it's walking speed, went down to Lowe's, and he's going into the garden center of Lowe's. And so when I found that out and I discovered that, I mean, I go to Lowe's. I know what's in the garden center of Lowe's. There's plenty of stuff in there to deal with this. Even if you got to go grab a plant and throw it at them, whatever. You could have handled this in a completely different manner. I mean, you see the video. It's not – this ain't a 100-mile-an-hour pursuit. This is a walking pursuit. And again – even if somebody brought the fact, well, he's got a knife and he's walking into the store and there's potential, and again, law enforcement, we need to think about potential other victims or hostages or things of nature for incidents that start to move. It's a scooter. You're walking behind him. You couldn't say, hey, y'all, he's got a knife. Y'all need to move out of the way, to deal with it and begin that de-escalation portion.
And you're right, Chief, but when we, and everything you just said, 1,000%. But I want the listeners to understand, when we talk about sleep deprivation, the community sees it from the physical. deprived of sleep, that physical. But that's not the issue with officers.
No.
I don't think. We deal with so much mental. We can lay in a bed for 8 hours and not sleep.
Well, you're right. That's the problem. And if you start to look at, and I know Doc's got information on this, because I know he talks about this. But when when you start talking about PTSD, and this is something that I've had to learn later on in my career through training and visiting with people about the military aspects of PTSD and how it transitions over into law enforcement. Again, not an excuse for this guy, because he did a horrible job and a complete disservice to our profession. But one of the main cures for that is sleep. It's sleep. Sleep resets the body. And when you've got physical conditioning, aerobic, anaerobic conditioning, you know, nutrition, hydration, all that kind of stuff that takes in the blood. And we're horrible at that. You know, how often, when you worked a deep night shift, Stan, what was available for you to eat? Whataburger, Wendy's, we don't have a Waffle House, IHOP, you know, whatever was around here.
You could get there, it's important to note that a lot of people think that officers have where show me out eating and you got 30-minute lunch. You don't have one. You could theoretically walk into, and I can just tell you my experience in Waco, you could theoretically walk into a restaurant and order $9 worth of food, which ain't a whole lot, but, you know, it's going to get you through the shift. It ain't the healthiest, but you got to eat something. And you could be waiting in to get your food, and you get that call. Guess what you do? You leave, and your food is left there. And you know what?
Dump it.
The city ain't reimbursing you for that $9. Multiply that by 4 days. And when your call load is extreme like that, there are officers who literally do not get to eat. And when you work midnight, people can say, well, eat before you go to work. Well, that's easy. You come home at 7 in the morning, you got your honey-do list, you got things you need to do, you pay your bills. You finally lay down 11:30, 12 o'clock. I'm talking for officers across America right now that work the midnight shift. You lay down 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, or in the afternoon, I'm sorry, to get some sleep in the sunlight. And you manage to sleep to about 6:30 or 7 when you got to get up and get ready for work. You don't know it. You felt like I slept. I'm okay. You're exhausted. And then you go to work, and you got to deal with all the bullshit the job brings. You haven't even hit the street yet. You're not even in the car, and you're hearing who screwed who's wife, with new policies coming down. You got to deal with bullshit questions detectives have on a report you got that got sent back to your box, and you're like answering them, read the report, and send it. You dealing with all this stress. Then you go out onto the street. Joe, don't come on here and defend detectives either.
No.
They could be a pain in the ass.
They're back in the office eating hors d'oeuvres and sipping champagne.
With ties on.
You know we are. Shrimp cocktail.
That's right.
There's a couple of things that have to be pointed out here. In this case, you have to talk about this thing called indemnification, particularly for officers off duty. That's number one. The other thing you got to look at is Tennessee versus Garden. This fits the parameters because the guy is not, you're looking at violation of seizures and what threat does he pose. There's so many things that just went wrong on this one. But let me bring this to your attention. We talk about officer involved shooting. The person we should really talk to about being involved in shooting is Ruffin. How does he see it from his point of view? How does officer involved shooting or shooting from your side look?
Okay. I tell you that. This is being pulled. I'm just going to take a second, Joe, thing that I've seen one day, and it was in prison, and a dude in a wheelchair and another dude banged out. And I said, yo, man, who in the hell beats up a dude in a wheelchair? And the dude said, nah, man, he swung on me, man. He tried to sucker punch me. And the dude's in a wheelchair. So when I seen this, This is like something totally like way out there. So from my perspective, one, you guys talking about police officer failing the police departments. I look at it too as the police departments tend to fail the police officers in a lot of cases. Izzy talks about the procedure and selecting cops. Sometimes it's the police that extract, being a police officer, extract something out of people. It brings out sometimes the worst, the most ugliest part of a human being. And it's not so much the him coming in as a bad person, but once he comes in and he sees what these bad cops are doing, or these cops are not following procedure and stuff like that, you begin to get puffed up and think that you're above. Now, you take this guy, you put him at Walmart. He has no supervisor. He's his own supervisor. He's his own everything. He don't follow no policy in his mind. So, I don't know, Joe, when I look at a police shooting, man, and I look at things like from a dude in the street, man, like if a dude in the street did some shit like that to another dude in the street, it'd be heavy repercussions, man. And like, even if you was on my side of town, you'd be thrown to the wolves, because that's some real coward shit that just took place. And I usually not the one that do the profanity up here. I use that. I leave that for Stan and Joe. But that is about as cowardly as you can treat another human being. You know what I'm saying? Like, with all the things that you have at your disposal, that you guys use to, like, disarm this guy, it's cowardly. And any street dude's going to look at it like, yo, man, that was some real coward shit. And then to shoot him in the back. If you would have took the shit and shot him in the back, it would have been some foul shit. But to shoot him in the back.
Yeah.
Again, look at Tennessee. Look at Tennessee versus Gardner. That's exactly what it talks about. Exactly. I mean, the fact of preventing the escape of any fleeing suspect, I mean, you could have been hit him in the head with a brick.
I mean, the tools available are, I mean, if he had it, I go back, I don't know whether he was even allowed to carry that to begin with, but I mean, just pepper spray is a food stuff. It's a food grade item. It burns, but you can eat the can if you wanted to. Some of them shoot up to 15 feet. I mean, again, he's in a scooter. We see the speed. You couldn't have got around him and stood in front of him and sprayed him or threw a plant at him or pushed them over or took your baton and stuck in a wheel. I don't
grab the back of the wheelchair, hold it down and roll that dude onto the ground.
Yeah. I mean, what are you doing up there in Brooklyn? Z?
I think the real question I want to ask is who are ex-cops or cops, have you ever worked on the side, and how did you feel like, oh, I don't have no supervisor, I'm my own boss?
How
did you feel?
I worked the same part-time job at Educators Credit Union for damn near 20 years.
Okay.
And when I came off of my, this is Stan talking. When I came off of my midnight shift with all the bullshit that I saw and bullshit I had to work with and put up with, when I got there and those normal people coming into the credit union in and out, they became my soap, because they didn't care what Stan saw the night before. Most of them didn't even know I worked midnights. But good morning, how you doing? How's everything? Glad you're here, or occasionally somebody would come in and drop you off something to eat. These people became friends of mine, and a lot of them are on the Facebook today, because in all those years of just seeing that cop at the desk,
They got to meet Stan, not Officer Mason. Officer Mason is what I got paid by. Stan is who I am to this day. Stan was Stan when some folks saw Officer Mason. But these people took time during their transactions or coming out. How you been? How's everything? You know, this and over the years, just like we all build friendships in society, I built friendships with a lot of these people who came to educate this credit union. I'm getting off my job at 7, my midnight shift, and I'm up there from 7 to 1 or 2. And sometimes if it was my day off, I would leave my job and stay there all the way till they closed. But just the employees, to me, I went there and I saw that part-time job is great. I'm being paid to be there, and they paid us good money. But I got a chance to interact with normal people who aren't in crisis, who don't need something from me, don't want something from me. They're not demanding anything from me. And because they were that way and how they approached me, I was able to do something that very few cops ever get a chance to be. I was able to be me with them. They didn't know. They know I got a badge on them, and I'm Officer Mason, that title. They know that. But they didn't care about what I did last night and who I saved from a burning tree or whose cat I got out of a tree. They didn't care about that stuff. These people walked in the door and cared about me. And this is what I want officers to understand. When you meet that community, everybody is not your enemy. There are people who care about you. Whether they're black or white or Black Lives Matter, there are people who care about you. If you take a moment and not look at how you feel about how they approached you, but examine the fact that they did approach you, how they approached you, and you'll find that they showed more concern in their approach to you than you would have ever shown in initiating an approach to them. That's not a policing thing. That's a personal thing. And we all have our borders right now. I don't like gay people. I hate Democrats. I hate Republicans. We ain't crossing that line. So that, I'm going to tell you, for me, working a part-time job, I worked at Lipsys, big metal distribution place in Waco. My working part-time jobs was not a physical hindrance on me. It was a mental health buffer, a safeguard. I developed relationships with the people that worked there at these places that weren't cops. They didn't want to hear about, I go in the locker room and work, all I'm hearing about is search warrants, who did this, who arrested who, and who's screwing who's white. Let's go and be real about it. That's all I hear. But when I went to work there, these people talked to me about, I took my kids here to this park, and I did this with my wife. And guess what I do in the middle of my policing? I'm so worried about saving the world, I forget I got a wife. I forget that I've been a great police officer, a great community service member, but maybe I have not been a good husband. Ain't nobody at work going to tell me that because they're screwing somebody else's wife or they're trying to be heroes. Not everybody, but it's a whole hell of a lot of people. The part-time jobs I worked saved me.
Go ahead, Doc.
Can I make a couple points real quick?
Go for it.
You know, one thing that John said that resonated with me is when he said, you know, he was talking about positions of power. Power can be dangerous, especially power unchecked. And basically, and another thing that Claire mentioned was, you know, when he was following the guy, you know, that he was so calm and he had resolved it in his mind that this person didn't, you know, he didn't have any dignity or respect for his right to live. You know, he had already resolved that in his mind, whether it was, you know, previous to that or why he was following the guy. You know, we're talking about human rights. And, you know, everybody deserves a right to life. You know, he devalued that man's life so much so that he was willing to shoot him in the back, and it was multiple gunshots. The thing that Chief said was, you know, and what Stan talked about, what's in the best interest of the community? The best interest of the community is for police mental health to be in the best health that they can have when they encounter these situations. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, is it just a vicious cycle where police not having a livable wage off of 40 hours, the lack of retention. I know here in Dallas, they don't make them sign a contract, and it's a constant rehiring. And does that lead to a lack of attention to detail, you know, and the tolerable stress versus toxic stress, which increases the cortisol, sleep deprivation, which, you know, increases cortisol. Then the intersectionality of mental health and nutrition, where, you know, in order for your body to convert tryptophan to serotonin, which is a mood stabilizer, you know, you need micronutrients. You need vitamins and minerals, not just donuts and food on the go. So it just, to me, it just seems like a vicious cycle that's just being played over and over again.
You know, Doc, and for Chief, before I go to you, I'm going to say this. You know what? I'm glad you brought the way you brought that up. I'll say this, and I'm going to use Dallas as an example, having been in Texas and Chief Cowboy Hater. You know what? If folks paid as much attention to their officers' physical and mental health as they do their favorite football teams' physical mental health, we'd be better off, because if Dallas goes undefeated, the citizen is gained nothing from that. Nothing. Zero. You're not any safer because Dallas won the Super Bowl. You're not. But the fact of the matter is, we will fill up our Facebook and our Instagram with who's healthy for next week, who's, you know, this guy got arrested. We hope we can get his head right to get him back. But you know what nobody thinks about? The real men and women who are out there dealing with the bullshit. They ain't making $1 million and they ain't doing commercials. And guess what? We don't put on suits and pads. We don't get to practice. Our practice is reality out there on the street every night. So to all sports jockeys, I hope to hear what you just said, Doc, because for all you sports jockeys, I'm an Eagles fan. It doesn't matter. I don't care what your team is. If you're going to spend this week worried about the mental health of the receiver or the quarterback, or he's not learning enough, he needs more training. If you're more worried about your sports franchise than you are about your police department, is there a problem?
And the difference, what Doc said is true. I mean, difference is you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry in sports, professional sports, and it's all about that almighty dollar. They have the ability to pay for that. Most cities and agencies, counties, they don't. So we kind of have to MacGyver this idea about mental health, financial health, nutritional health. And you know, what Doc is saying is correct. It's, you know, I worked up in the Dallas area. It was a constant cycle of, you know, hiring. You know, they were getting picked by these other agencies up in North Texas. You know, they were saying, hey, you know, Dallas PD, 4 years, clean jacket. Come on over here. We'll start you at $85,000 a year. Right. And so they just bring them in laterally. But part of it, not to get off of our crazy shooting, but the other part, Doc, I was going to say, is the financial health, where, you know, in Texas, since you become a police officer, first thing you buy is a brand new truck and a boat, mm-hmm. and you're automatically put into debt at a job that you're making, you know, $40,000-$50,000 a year. And so you can't ever really recover from that, rather than putting money into savings and providing this stuff. And that's where the off-duty comes in, off-duty job. That's why they're so prevalent and a mainstay in a lot of agencies. That's how a lot of those individual officers survive, just by working that off-duty. It's not the wage, but it starts before that. And that's another show, another topic, but that's part of this whole thing. That's part of this, what we need to consider as a wellness program for law enforcement, as mental health, nutritional health, financial health. And I think if you could get it done correctly and get it done right, it would eliminate some of these issues and problems that you see that we see in these videos.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that. Now, will it eradicate all of it? No, because if we have bad people that are getting into this profession that should never be hired, and they're slipping through the cracks and they're getting put into these positions of power and have the ability to do things like in this video. But I think we can put a significant curb on a lot of this nonsense if we get a lot of that put in place. Problem is that our program's out there and they're financially straining, but again, it's where the priorities of the department, what do you want to put forth as the effort to make a better organization that then better serves the public?
Now, Chief, if I could just insert, for those who are comfortable, when the Chief talks about health, and you have a problem with health and you see it as physical, I'll insert also, slash mark behind the Chief's comments,
mental health and well-being. I'll insert that. Let me grab a caller real quick, 404 area code 2002. Good morning.
What's going on, Stan? What's going on, good people?
All right. What's up, Tran?
Nothing much, man. Just sitting there listening, and that the one thing I do like about your show, Stan, is that every time I listen to your show, I get more good pointers on stuff that I need to talk about on my show. And one thing that you did touch on, and I wanted to touch on, what I call it thunder stealing, you guys elaborated on the many weapons lower than the use of force that could have been used on the guy in the wheelchair, because I didn't understand it either. I didn't understand it at all. So, you know, like you said, and you made another good reference about the NFL and everything, it's 100% right. You guys don't get to go to practice every day and practice for the real thing. You guys have training once a year, so many hours. You do what you do, and y'all have to survive this for another year to make sure that you have a job, and you got to perform well, or you're out of a job. So I appreciate that comment. Like I said, I took some notes down, and I like listening to you guys give input. Last thing I wanted to say, this has to do with the first thing you were talking about, selective outrage. And that's what, Stan, that's something that's going to resonate with me for the rest of my life, selective outrage. But the problem with some people that have the same skin color as mine is that their selective outrage is reversed selective outrage. Now, you want to get mad because a black man told a lie on two fictitious white people. You want to say that? Well, here's my thing, and I don't care who feeling I hurt when I say this. For the people that believe that shit, take your ass over to Emmett Till's grave in Chicago and tell him how fucked up it is that these black folks are running around here lying on white people. I want you to do that. If you've never worked in a soup kitchen, you've never fed the homeless, you've never done anything for anybody except sit there and try to promote everything other than what you need in your community, then you are a complete and total black asshole. That's what you are. So anybody that says that, I am sick to death of hearing certain people come on your show every week and try to say what black folks are doing is wrong, but you never reference anybody else. Brown, white, you never reference anybody else. And it's these sellout, these tap-dancing, dry-patch, coon Negroes that I cannot stand who get up here and just glorify everything other than what needs to be glorified. We all need that leg up. We all need a hand up. Every last one of us. This is America. You claim it's America. This is this time of the year we say peace on earth and goodwill toward men. When the fuck have we ever had peace on earth or goodwill toward men in any capacity?
Oh, you owe me $10. You dropped the F-bomb.
Fine. I said, okay. I got $10. I got you. I'm sick to death of hearing this. Every time this year we want to talk about peace on earth, we do that. We talk about good. We do this every year. And you wonder why people like me don't believe in these holidays. I don't believe in them because we don't do it. But we keep claiming we did. This man was shot in the back 9 times. Nine times. Not once, not twice. 9 times. He was executed. Is that peace on earth and goodwill toward men? That's all I got to say. I appreciate my time. Appreciate y'all giving me the time.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Let me go down 314 area code, 4600. What's going on?
You know, you're on a different topic. But, you know, there's a lot of things. Yeah, I say you're on a different topic for the first one I called in this morning. Okay. But, see, Stan, here's the problem. Here's another problem. People don't comply. They don't want to comply. And, you know, you got organizations and people out there using words like they trying to kill us. When they talk about police, what are they talking about? White police officers. And you got that going on from organizations like Black Lives Matter, your Maxine Waters, Bookers. So that's causing a problem. People do not want to comply.
No. Brother, you know, I always let you finish, and that is semantical bullshit. I will call you out on that. I usually don't go there, but I'm going there right now. And I'm going to tell you why. Through my 25 years of not what the Republicans told me, or the Democrats told me,
over the people I like fucking told me. I was out there. And you know what? When I spoke up about the bullshit I have watched for 25 years that black people have gone through under policing, the black officers wouldn't stand up for me. Okay? So I'm going to tell you, I do this show. I pay for everything I do. I try to stay in the background. I try to stay nice. But you know what? White folks weren't exactly clapping for Stan either. Oh, evangelical Christian, Stan is so great. That is bullshit. So for me and my little circle, I don't give a shit about Democrats, Republicans, or Blue Lives Matter, or Black Lives Matter, because guess who I support? I ain't got no money and I'm hungry, Lives Matter. And I'm any color. So I can't entertain that.
Stan, that's what I taught my kids. That's exactly what I taught them. If you was a police officer in my neighborhood and you came to my kids and told them to stand on one leg or sit over there, they would do it.
You know what?
I don't care what color you are, they would do it.
What you are missing is, it's not a matter of what my kids would or would not do. It was a matter of me as a man, a father, a figure, that if my son did not stand up to the way I raised him, I am knee-deep, ankle-deep, neck-deep in his ass as to why.
And you know what, Stan? You know what, Stan? You're running out of time. That's the way I was raised, too. If you had told me, Stan, to do this, that, or the other, I would do it. I wouldn't fight you a half court on the street, Stan. I would go to the court. I'll see you later, Stan. You ain't got much time. Thank you.
Okay, no, I know it, but you're going to be listening when you hang up, so I'm going to say this. I've been quiet and patient. I love everybody. You don't have to agree with Stan to be on Stan's show or Joe's show. You don't have to be. I just don't call up and always tell me what black people do wrong. Damn it, I've been black. I know that. We got shit to work on. Don't call all the time and be defensive of what the opposition has done. You know, sick of that. I am sick and tired. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to play this clip because, you know, I mean, I paid for this. If I didn't believe in this, I wouldn't do this show. I wouldn't. This ain't no studio production. When I come on here, y'all understand. This is not a white people come here feel happy show. It ain't. It ain't a black people come here kumbaya black power. It ain't. We're going to get real here. And don't call up here and defend a segment of people. Defend the fucking issue. Or deal with the issue at discussion. I get sick of that. I simply will not do it. I'm going to get through this show. I'm going to play this next clip. And we're going to go to the next one because I need the woosah moment. And we're going to move from here. Okay, hang on. Hang on. I got to get some volume on this one.
Got twisted up, but
dude, look here. I'm like, I love callers, but don't come crazy. You know, we'll get to it when we get to it. I'm at that moment. Go ahead, Joe.
I thank you. That's all I say.
No, you know, I'm polite, brother. I try to, I ain't no professional. So I'm just going to be me, 100. Folks can like me, not like me, tune in. We don't beg y'all we don't ask anybody to like us, subscribe. We don't.
I got something to say about this, about, you know, people don't comply.
Come on, Chief.
I'm going to call BS on that, because this is what I do for a living, and about 98 or 99% of the people comply. You know, when we start talking about non-compliance and that context the caller was speaking about, that's a small, very small, razor thin majority of people. I mean, this is what I do for a living. This is what a lot of people do for a living. And if we had total, all out non-compliance, then you would see a whole lot more. We're only talking about a small section. So that's all I got to say about it. Unless I'm missing the point somewhere, people comply.
that's just my job. That's what I do. So I could be wrong. Could be different in other places, but I think it works that way. We would be talking about 9 or 10 of these particular type cases every time we do the damn show. That's my point.
And Chief, you know, you didn't miss anything, and I'm going to apologize to the caller in that I don't like using that many expletives. I usually don't, but I don't do a fucking apologist show for black people or white people or you so-called moderate folks who want to be in the middle safe. That's not what we do here every Saturday. We come hard. I don't give a damn about your Christianity. I'm a pastor. So what? I'm black. I'm just, we don't care. This is a place where we're going to come have real conversation. And we can have that, but if you come in here talking crazy and acting crazy, we're going to meet you crazy because Stan ain't scared to. And now I'm finally going to try to get to what I wanted to put on earlier.
High-profile case out of Minnesota. Opening arguments began in the trial for former Minnesota police officer Tim Potter. Potter shot and killed Dante Wright during a traffic stop earlier this year. Officers pulled Wright over for an expired tag and dangling air freshener. According to the criminal complaint, when they discovered he also had an outstanding misdemeanor warrant, Potter claims that she mistook her handgun for her taser. The defense calling it a tragic accident. Prosecutors arguing her actions were criminal.
She was trained to be aware of the differences between her gun and her taser. She was also trained about the risk of pulling the wrong weapon and that drawing and firing the wrong weapon could kill someone.
She made a mistake. This was an accident. She's a human being.
A jury will decide whether to find her guilty of first and second degree manslaughter. Potter is expected to take the stand in her own defense.
All right, well, I'm going to let that go because that was some bullshit. But we got about, God, we're at 2 minutes, and we're just getting to this. It's open. Whoever wants to come in on it, because I'm good to go to the end. I got so fed up a minute ago, but y'all go ahead.
I'll do really quick, a couple seconds on that last clip. First thought, I didn't know having an air fresher dangling from your rearview mirror was a crime. I think that's the craziest bunch of crap I've ever seen, unless it hinders your view. Last 2 points I'll make, and I'm just going to say it bluntly and openly and honestly, officer.
Go ahead, Chief. Don't worry about that.
That's it. That's all I got to say. That's what that case is, officer fatigue and lack of training.
Amen.
You mistook the item, even though they're, and I believe in this case, what I found out is that it's cross-draw, taser, straight-draw handgun, so which meant it was on the opposite side. Officer fatigue, lack of training. You didn't use the weapons properly, didn't train on them properly, never had decision-making, never had the real force options. You had to transition, right? When you're in the heat of it, mm-hmm. You got your hands on somebody and have to transition from soft empty hand to hard empty hand to intermediate weapon. That never happened. I'm just telling you, it never happened. And then I don't know the work schedule, but I'm fairly confident officer fatigue itself played a significant part in that poor decision making.
I just got one thing to say. You know, being a pharmacist for 20 years, man. You know, it does happen, like Chief said, and, you know, one mistake with medication can be fatal, you know, and thank God this never happened to me, but you know, I have some compassion and empathy for that situation if that truly was the case. But, you know, mistakes do happen in pharmacy, and they are fatal. That's just a tough situation.
Hey, Doc, there's a reason in the cross-draw position, too, just so you know.
That's
going to be an issue. And try. There's a reason they put it in cross.
Yeah, yeah, right. You're accountable. Yeah,
whether the prosecutor wants to say it's an accident or not, you need to be held accountable for that. No ifs, ands, or buts. There's not a mistake. I don't believe it was intentional homicide. I don't think it's there. But at a minimum, a manslaughter charge. You're responsible for that.
Yeah, manslaughter. Because Chief, to your point, we're talking negligence here because police we train, and here comes one of our blue secrets coming out to the community. We train under a philosophy called muscle memory. Everything you see on our belt, and you will look at a certain department, and you may see 40% wear all their stuff the same way. Some other people have stuff different ways. But you'll find officers put things to wear in a fight. When Stan went to work, I knew exactly on my belt. My ass baton was never behind my gun. I didn't like it there. I got big-ass hands. I didn't want it there. When I reach for that gun, I don't want to grab nothing but the gun. So my ass baton was on the left. But officers individually put everything on their belt. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a fact. We go home if we're good officers, and we practice. We clear our gun, take the magazine out, take the book. We practice being able to get that gun out of the holster, being able to say, put the gun back up, get your taser out. Put the gun back up, get your spray out. Put your taser up, get your handcuffs out. We practice that. So when you get to 20, 25 years, you got that. You know on that belt, if that belt is half inch, I can tell you putting it on Joe, Chief, Claire, if I'm lying, if it was a half inch off kilter, I knew it. And I'd
agree.
That's right. So no. Her defense, I'm not buying that.
Well, there's just a simple fact that I guess that's her defense attorney says it's an accident.
No,
she's accountable either way.
You know what she was? She was scared. She was scared. At 25 years, if we're going to do a show next week, our show is going to be on scare, because I've watched enough of these auditor deals. I'm sick of officers saying, well, I'm going to search you because you got a camera pointed at me and I think it's a gun. Fucking come on, really? If you're that scared, go do something else. Because people are dying because officers are scared. Not because they are. Because if they are, if you tell me you're scared, you're not seeking cover, you're not making distance, you're not creating distance, things we're trained to do. Legally covering your actions of what you want to do and justifying your position. So we'll do that show. May not be next week, but we'll do that one. Anyway, we're getting down to the end. Doc, Rich, appreciate you being up in the house, brother. Holler at us. Get some final pointers, man.
I'm just happy to be back and you know, it was a great show today. You know, it's unfortunate, you know, with the, you know, somebody gets shot 9 times in the back. You know, like I continue to say, it boils down to respecting someone's right to life. And that's, you know, that's how I feel about it. And Jussie Smollett, he gets no passes for me whatsoever. You know, in the historical context of that news, just, man, it infuriates me.
Now, you doing a lot of good work up in DFW, brother. You're not leaving like that. Come on now. You're in the house. You're doing a lot of good work. Take a minute. Some of the good stuff you're doing there. And you better shout out Miss Doc, because I'll call you out.
Yeah, man. We were out last Sunday at DLC filming of his documentary with Reverend Peter Johnson in the community of Pinkston High School, West Dallas. You know, doing it's called hashtag the funeral is council, addressing the gun violence in the communities. You know, a lot of kids shoot each other. One of my wife's good friends 2 nights ago, there was a shooting involving 2 teenagers. They got wounded. I think they're okay, you know, for as that goes. But then he started to talk about the trauma and the mental health. I always go back to mental health and community, how these continue, you know, gun violence is, you know, it has a, you know, a resounding effect on the community, where it's not just what we see happens for us, the shootings, but the impact it has on the other children. So I'm meeting with the principal next week in Fort Worth, pre-K through 5, addressing the mental health issues out at an elementary school where the kids are just acting out. And we continue, I go right back to the mental health, the nutrition, the family environment. We got to look at individuals as embedded within systems and deal with the individual, the family, and then, you know, the community and then society. You know, we got to work it inside out. That's the only way it works.
Appreciate you, Doc. Tell Miss Doc I said what's up. Tell her I said Oswald say hi.
I did. I told you to call her earlier before. She was like, she had to miss you.
All right, well, you tell her Oswald said hi.
Yeah, hopefully now I'll be back soon.
You know, that's what I'm doing now. I don't know how many thousands of shots I gave, and I keep saying it's like COVID years and pharmacy time. It seems like we've been vaccinated way longer than January, man.
Right.
It's been a long ride.
Appreciate you, brother, and everything you do. Let me drop down. Claire, final thoughts. What's up? What you thinking?
Hey guys, that was a great show today. Glad we got to talk about shootings and bring up all those good points about training and the importance of mental health and police officers. I think it's upsetting, like everybody else said about the Jesse case, because for me, in particular, I am part of the LGBTQIA plus community. I'm a part of the Black community as well. So to have both of those,
social identities.
I mean, the intersectionality is, both attacks in very different aspects. It's hurtful and it's harmful to anybody else that wants to step up that actually does happen to. It's just devastating. And on the second video, where the guy gets shot in the back, like the doctor said, it's a lack of understanding for someone else's life other than your own. I think that, like Izzy said, it's a, like who you're recruiting, it has to do with just the person person that you're hiring. Are they understanding that this is, that if they were to pull out that weapon, that they are taking a life just like their own? It's not anything less than that. And same goes to the third video. Whether it's fatigue or whatever, she still needs to understand that regardless of whether it's a mistake or not, she took someone's life. Mistakenly or due to lack of medication or the wrong medication, she should still be held accountable because it was a mistake, but it was a fatal mistake. So that's what I got. That's what I wanted to share and touch on.
All right. Appreciate you, baby girl. Big Izzy.
As always, glad to be here. And I mean, I agree with everything everybody's saying. I think when we talk about accountability, we need to really start trying to hold these departments accountability for what I perceive as a general apathetic approach to their industry and their officers. Because from hiring, recruitment, through training, through everything, whether you're a bad officer when you get in, whether you're a good officer who becomes corrupted, these things can happen because these departments are not keeping track of their house and are not keeping track of what needs to be done. They may be offering the training, but how's the training done? Are they ensuring that the training is being handled appropriately by the right people? Are they ensuring that their officers are paying attention to the training? They're not. They're letting these people slide through the cracks. They're letting them be tired. They're letting them be exhausted. They're promoting a hero narrative and a hero culture that supersedes everything else. And I know the chief said money is a factor, and it definitely is, but the culture is a major factor because the NYPD, depending on who you talk to, is a $6 to $8 billion department, and they don't give a shit about officer wellness. It is bottom of the barrel. These people are tired. They don't work. They're working the same things, everything that we're talking about. They're not prioritizing things. So we have to start holding these departments responsible for not taking care of their officers. Because there's literally, I've had too many people tell me there's red flags over all of these situations. Mm-hmm. There were red flags probably. If you talk to that cop who shot that guy 9 times in the back, go talk to his fellow officers and ask them if there were any red flags before that happened, that something like that might happen. I guarantee you there were. But they don't respond. They're not looking for them, and they're not dealing with them.
Amen. Big John.
Yes, once again, another great show. A lot of great points were made. I'm just calculating, Stan. The F-bomb is $10.
Okay.
You're taking up a collection to raise $310 to pay for the F-bombs and all the other words. So we need to raise $310. Have a great week.
I came back on the right show, man.
You know what? And what makes me feel bad is Joe didn't. And I want to say, John, I got to say, you know, God bless callers. I mean, this is a passionate show. Every one of us on here, nobody here is getting paid. And we're all here. So when we're talking, no, Joe, that's why you ask and get a check. So, you know, when y'all hear us, this is us. We're not a Facebook personality. We're not a social media personality. This is real here. This is not like the mother shows. We ain't holding up no images here. You know, and so I try not to, but I'm human. And I did 25 years of policing. And one of the things that has always got me with the do-gooders, I never use profanity people, the bullshit people. This is what has always got me with them. When you go and you're doing your do-gooder stuff and your compassionate stuff and you're dealing with somebody who don't have shit and the world is kicking the shit out of them while they don't have shit, how do you go back and explain that to the people who are in a position to do right? I can't use that language. Guess what? When the house is on fire, you don't say, well, it's elevated. Is the heat temperature is elevated in that house producing smoke. No, it's fucking on fire. So for all the people who are afraid of bad words, and the bad words offend you, and go ahead and go on. And for those people who say, well, I thought he was Christian. He's not Christian. He uses bad language. Well, guess what? We just dealt with a bad precedent. Stan's personal opinion. I pay for it. I'll say it. I said nothing Donald Trump hasn't said. So that is what it is. Who did I miss? Joe. Come on, bro.
How can I follow that?
I just want to say hello. Like $400. I think we're like $20 off at this point.
That's fine.
I just want to say hello. I'm glad you responded to Clayton Bigsby this time and not me.
Just say hi, Mom.
Hey, Stan, you need to stop talking, man. You're raising up.
You know what? You know the beauty of truth, John, and passion is? It's liberating to be able to say what you want to say. And never look to the left or right to worry about who's behind you. As you walk forward in whatever God has chosen for you to do, if you're listening to the footsteps, you're not listening to the message. And when you get to the mission, instead of worrying where everybody else is, rejoice in the fact that maybe God said, you are enough. You're all I needed to send. That's how Stan runs his life. I can learn from everybody, but I'm unapologetic. When I believe something, I believe it. If I'm wrong, I will come on here and say I'm wrong. But with that, nobody has anything. We're going to get ready to get out of here. I appreciate everybody.
One last thing, Stan.
One last thing.
You look so liberated, right?
Yeah.
Right now, I want to feel good myself. Great fucking show.
There you go. There you go, John. I'll take that $50.
I've been holding that all year long, man.
Yeah, but big as you are, John, the F-bomb from you is like five times what covers from Stan.
That's like 200.
Hey, but seriously, everybody on the panel, you guys, you know, we're always trying to improve the show. And Facebook, I wasn't ignoring y'all. I can't see y'all today because I got some other monitors and stuff hooked up for the video stuff we're doing. I'll get it figured out. But so I wasn't ignoring y'all. Appreciate everybody being here. You guys that take time every week to be here, I appreciate y'all and I love y'all. And with that, we're going to get out of here.
Behind the Blue Curtain, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Viewer discretion is advised. Thank you.